2000 AD, 40 years of Thrill Power Festival. No slain, no gain. Borak Thung, Earthlitz, and welcome to a supplemental episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. At the beginning of February, we had a fantastically successful 40th anniversary event, and it was an incredible day. Over 1,000 Squatstick Thargo, over 100 creators, all crammed into the Novotel in Hammersmith in London for a day of panels and signings and sketchings and just general fun. And all the feedback we've had has been absolutely wonderful. So thank you to everybody who came. Now, we appreciate that not everybody could get tickets, so we thought we would bring the event to you. So in between episodes of the 2000 AD Thrillcast, we're going to be bringing you panels recorded at the 40 years of Thrill Power Festival. And this week it is No Slain, No Gain. What another incredible lineup. We've got Simon Bisley, Simon Davis, Glenn Fabry, and Clint Langley to talk about everybody's favourite Celtic barbarian. Four creators, these are iconic artists, discussing their work on Pat Mills' saga, from Glenn's black and white artwork in the 1980s to Simon's groundbreaking painted art on the Horned God, and into the 21st century with Clint and Simon's work. Your host for this panel is me, Michael Molsher. Welcome, everybody, to No Slanya, No Gain. Which doesn't quite work, but you know what I mean. I'm absolutely delighted to welcome three of the not just the best slain artists, but some of the best 2000 AD artists ever. Simon Davis, give him a round of applause. Clint Langley. And some bloke you've probably never heard of, Mr. Simon Bisley.
Metal.
Fresh from his live drawing success over on the other stage.
Success, was it?
It certainly looked that way. You seem to be having fun.
A few people laughing, I think. Just realised how badly I can draw, really.
Huh? with you or at you?
Oh, I think at me. I think.
Oh, no.
I was cracking those jokes. You know those jokes where no one laughs at all? It's like that, you know? I think we were just sitting there resting, just in between going somewhere else. They just sit and park there for a minute. There's a strange man sitting there drawing. Anyway, there you go.
Anyway, moving on. We're here to talk about Slain slash... Oh, cool. You know, we're just going to go with Slain. Is everybody all right with that? Otherwise, this microphone's going to get drenched in spittle. Originally in development from 1981, it didn't see print until 1983. Original episode done by Angie Kincaid. One of the things that when Glenn gets here, I will ask him this question as well. But I wanted to find out from you guys what influence Angie's original designs for the characters were. Was that original episode something you went back and looked at, or were you building on top of, you know, like Glenn's work and David Pugh's work and things like that? Simon, do you want to go first on that?
I'm not particularly steeped in 2000 AD folklore. I didn't particularly get it from the beginning or ever or anything like that. So the first work I really saw was Simon's Slain stuff, and that's sort of my point of reference. And then from that, moved back to Mick McMahon stuff, which is...
Sorry to interrupt. Okay. Everybody, Glenn Fabry. But Glenn, this question was originally intended for you. Obviously, Angie Kincaid came up with the design of the characters and did the first episode. I wondered how much influence that had on your portrayal of Slain, or whether you were building on the other artists who'd portrayed him.
I always thought that Mick McMahon's Slain was the best artwork that's ever actually been in 2000 AD.
Right, so it was mixed that you used as a foundation.
I was just terrified. You know. originally, Pat Mills, when I was at art college, I did this sort of a fanzine thing called Working Class Superhero, and I did a stupid sort of series of drawings in it, like a little comic strip. And we ended up with like sort of 500 copies of this thing. And I took it round sort of, not conventions so much, but comic marts, me and my mates, and just tried to flog them off to people because we had too many of them lying around. And quite a few kind of professional people kind of picked them up. One of those people was Brian Talbot. And Brian put me in contact with Pat Mills. Originally, I'd been to the 2000 AD offices about like sort of three times trying to get employed. And they would just like sort of say, go away and draw some pages of Judge Dredd and come back and then we'll see, type thing. But I never got any work out of it. But, you know, sort of Pat saw my drawings and, you know, sort of said, have a go at doing the character. And I decided that I was going to draw Slane looking like Michael York, the actor from the film Three Musketeers. And because I thought, you know, that's quite a, you know, he's a good looking guy, but there's something wrong with his face. You know, his nose is all bashed up, you know, that kind of thing. And I quite like that idea. And Pat, I said, no, not Michael York. So poof. I want you to draw him like Jack Nicholson. And then he sent me loads and loads of photographs of Jack Nicholson. So I said, draw him like that. But I realised that if you're drawing a comic strip, you can't just draw photos of Jack Nicholson with the expressions he's got on. They need to kind of fit in the story. So I ended up like sort of putting faces in the mirror to get the expressions right and all this kind of stuff and drawing it down. So it looks like a kind of a cross between Jack Nicholson and me when I was 20. You know, that, and that was it, you know.
Some Billy Idol.
A little bit of Billy Idol, yeah. I wanted him good looking, like, you know, like a movie star, pop star sort of way.
So also, your own face at the time.
A bit.
Yeah. Remember, we were both good-looking guys, but
we were. Yeah.
I think you're doing yourselves down.
He was a good-looking guy. I could see Glenn at the time. It was very similar.
Yeah, years gone by. Years have passed. Water has gone under the bridge.
But, I want to come back to you, Simon, because you're explaining about your the foundations of your portrayal of Slane for a second there.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of first experience really of 2000 was Simon's Slane, and then from that, saw Glenn's and then Mick's, and then so when it came to do it, it was incredibly sort of intimidating, and the whole sort of exercise was a damage limitation thing, just because, you know, following those guys was too much to think about. So, it seems like every artist has brought their own sort of thing to it. Like I was following on from Clint and his very distinctive style. So just sort of brought it back to a little bit more, I don't know, straightforward and simple, because that's all I can manage.
Clint, I want to come to you because you've had two cracks at Slane with two very different styles. Back in Prog 958, it was line art that you started with. But then when you returned to the strip, it was your digital art that we know you for now. What was your thinking about that in both times? I mean, was it just where you were at in your career at the time, or was it the way that you wanted to portray Slane?
I originally, it was all painted, you know, after Simon's work. There was Glenn's work, and I think Greg Staples was doing Name of the Sword. And they wanted to actually speed up the process of getting more Slane out. So they thought, well, we'll get somebody to do it in black and white and colour it. And it was fatal because, you know, I wanted to paint Slane. And so suddenly I found myself doing this black and white story, which actually Slane hadn't been for years. And hence I actually took so long, they actually had to split the story. And they split it at episode 6 as well, and it went away. And then, like, I think it was about 2 months later that the last four parts came out, which was, you know, pretty bad form for 2000 AD. So the black and white stuff, I was trying, I kind of wanted to try and create a sort of almost I suppose an Arthur Rackham sort of feel to it. It was all sort of Robin Hood, and it was all sort of set in the woods. But it was always a big regret of mine that I didn't get to do my hand painted style. So they obviously, when I came back to Slane to do the Books of Invasions, I'd started working digitally, and I could see that there was maybe a way in which I could bring some kind of cinema, sort of, you know, I mean, it's cinematic anyway with everyone who's worked on Slane, but just to bring something, you know, which could say something, you know, on the shoulders of giants, really. I mean, you know, it's following McMahon, Simon, Glenn, Massimo. I mean, Massimo's work was my first Slane. I missed Angie's. But when I saw Massimo's work as a kid, and Slane walked out, I mean, I'd seen the Incredible Hulk warp out. But when you saw Slane warp out, you just thought, what the hell? It's just grotesque. I mean, his eyeballs hanging out, his lips are peeling back. You know, I'd never seen anything like that. And that really kind of turned me on to 2008 and Slane. A bit like Torquemada. When I saw Kevin O'Neill's Torquemada, I used to stare at the page, the cover where he did a Torquemada head with his, you could see inside his nostrils. I just thought, what the fuck? What are these guys on? I've got to have some of it, you know? So, yeah.
Simon, let's come to you. With something like The Horn God, a lot of the influences are very obvious to people who know their comics, but take us through how you arrived at such a distinctive style.
Well, firstly, the reason why I painted Slane in the first place was because what Glenn had done. There's no way on God's earth I could get close to his inking, because it was beautiful. You would look at it. So I thought the best thing I'd do is just paint it, because with the paint you can do a lot. And so I derived through it through... I looked at American comic books, big fan of Frazetta. Also, actually, the whole process of the book was me learning to paint. If you look at it, you can actually see where I was influenced by Sir Gustav Klimt, Richard Corbin, and you saw some Bill Sienkiewicz in there as well. So it was all those kind of things influenced me at the time, plus my life at the time, the music and everything else, you know. But I agree with Glenn that McMahon stuff is just absolute killer. You can't top that. I think he did the ultimate Slane, I think. It's huge. It's incredible. Wasn't it?
You know, Sky Pirates things. Oh, yeah. My God. And I had to take over from that. It was just really terrifying. Fucking terrifying.
I mean, it's interesting to read Mick's comments about the style that he came up with, which as so often happens with Mick, it's purely practical. So you look at his work on something like The Last American, and, you know, it's born out of the type of markers that like the Coptic markers he was using. And the same with his Slane work, you know, he was using tracing paper and all this, that and the other. And for everyone to be so influenced by something that was a purely practical decision on his part, is incredible. You know, you've all name checked him. Not, you know, there's lots of people who've drawn Slane, but that seems to be the source, the mother load that everybody comes back to for inspiration.
It was so easy for him. Yeah, that dynamism, the power, everything in it. And it was so real. It was very stylized, but I think it was so very consistent at the same time. You couldn't see him struggling anywhere. And I think it worked as a whole. And I think it's a masterpiece of drawing in any regard against anything has been drawn.
Let's talk about what the character of Slane means to you guys. Because, I mean, we've kind of touched on already about, you know, being inspired by Massimo's warp spasms and all this and the other. But Simon, I was interested in the comment you made. You know, you're not embedded necessarily in 2008 lore.
No, not really. I sort of came from... I used to read a lot of comics, but I was more interested in painting and, you know, just sort of, I don't know, just painting and drawing, really. So when I saw... Simon stuff in 2000. I thought, God, I mean, this is amazing. You can paint for a weekly comic. That's absolutely incredible. So, from that point onwards, I just saw the and sort of from seeing Simon stuff, then I became aware of a lot of really brilliant American artists like Kent Williams and John Muth and Jeff Jones, and sort of suddenly realized, yeah, this could be a viable propositions to try and paint for comics. So it's funny, after Simon's sort of stuff came out, there was a big sort of slew of painters, some good, some not so good. So I sort of got caught up in that sort of bit. So it's just, I think I've just sort of been a bit more stubborn than everybody else rather than better. I just think for what you lack in ability, I've just stuck at it and
make up in perseverance.
Exactly, yeah exactly that.
Clint, what about you? What does Slane as a character mean to you in your career?
I think it means everything, really. I mean, like I said, I mean, it was the first character I really took to when I read 2000 AD. I mean, I loved Judge Dredd and Rogue Trooper and Nemesis, but I think Slane for me was, it was just unlike anything else I'd seen. I mean, there was Conan the Barbarian, but Slane just seemed just out there, really. You know, he was a bit of a git, which is quite, you know, unusual. And like I said, he had this sort of ugly superpower. But I think what's great about Slane is it's had all these wonderful artists. You know, you're lucky to come on board sort of later because they've done all the hard work for you. They've done all the design, you know, and, you know, the spiky hair and that kind of evolved from Massimo's slightly tighter kind of spiky hair onto sort of Glenn's, which had more of a twist and a punk look to it, and then onto Simon's, which became more like a mane. So, you know, the character's kind of evolved, and it evolves with each artist, really. Every artist kind of brings something new to it. I mean, Simon was saying to me last night, you know, why didn't you give Slane's hero harness, the horns? And I thought, yeah, I couldn't do that because it's just so Simon. You know, these big horns that sort of poke out. And so it's just, every artist brings something really sort of unique to the character, and it kind of, you know, you can build on it. So it's a really wonderful sort of gig to get, and I'm just sort of waiting for Simon to sort of just say, you know, I've had enough, do you fancy taking it back?
Glenn, something I wanted to ask you about was Slane was the first time 2000 AD had strayed into this kind of swords and sorcery world, and even by the 80s, that had become quite cliche with the Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, all the movies where we'd seen all the same tropes come over and over again. Yet Slane has remained remarkably evergreen, even though it plays with those same tropes. Why do you think that is?
I think it remains evergreen because it's actually really incredibly old. It's all Cú Chulainn and all of that kind of stuff from Irish mythology. You know, so it's a bit like people never stop making movies about, you know, sort of Greek gods, you know, bloody Wall of Troy and all of that kind of thing. So I think it's a similar kind of thing. You know, it comes from old ancient historical magic. I think, and it's definitely got a quality of that about it.
And what does Slane mean to your career? Was it an incredibly, I mean, obviously it's your first major work, but how did it influence how you went on?
It was just odd. I went to art college, and then I was kind of looking around for work. And back in those days, before you had a computer, you can put a portfolio and carry it around in a little thing that you keep in your pocket. You used to have to drag along something that's about four times bigger than this and 19 times as heavy. And I was on the dole, so I go all the way up to London carrying this sort of big thing, and I put it on the desk of some art editor, and they look at it and tell me I was shit. And they have to go all the way back, and it cost me 20 quid of my dole money, you know. But it's like that. I mean, The only other job I was working behind, working on the forecourt of a garage, pumping up people's tyres and changing car batteries and things like that. So, you know, the fact that I ended up kind of working and then all of a sudden was successful. And then you go along to sort of things like this and people would be queuing up to go, people are asking for your autograph. It's fucking odd, you know. You'd be, I'd just be that guy standing by pump number three, so then, you know, what was it? £10, pump number three, yes, sir. You know, like that. And then somebody was asking for my autograph. It was just crazy.
Brilliant. So, Simon, obviously the Horn God launched you into the stratosphere of comics and made your name. Did you have any inkling about the kind of fire that you and Pat were making on the book?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I just wanted to show off. Because I was young, and you are, you're competitive and young. I just wanted people to get excited about what I was doing because I was excited. I knew what I was doing was going to make some waves, you know. And I was all the ego and all that bit, it was all there. And I loved it. I thrived on it. The only thing, the only problem is actually, Glenn.
Simon Bisley has left the building. I can't remember somebody saying that.
I'm not even in the building. Someone looked at my work the first time, they said, an editor at 2008 said it was really scratchy. You know, so what do you mean scratchy? It's always very scratchy because I think most people are using like paintbrushes and nice, very bone and esque looking stuff. You know, except I contradict myself because actually my mom was kind of scratchy. But this looked very scratchy. But so the only thing I had a problem with, I was having problems with deadlines on Slane because obviously painting it was really getting time consuming. But it was fun because I was evolving as an artist and I was learning and experimenting with different techniques and different mediums. The only problem I had with it, I found, was inconsistency in Slane's face. I really never found... I think I was using my own face, as you do with everything. You usually look at anything I do with my face is in it, you know. I said I give myself a much squarer jawline, obviously, and whatnot. But no, I think it was quite inconsistent works in a lot of ways, especially towards the end. I was really, really, very, very... very late on the deadline, so you could see the work was really crap at the end. I think they sent it back to me and said, can you just finish it? You know, so I did, you know, I did a bit more work on it. But it was a great experience. But yeah, I think it's been fun, you know, it has been. I think Slane is a timeless character. It's all about earth, the season and earth and fertility, that kind of thing. It's relevant to all of us, isn't it? Medieval stuff always works. It's not medieval, sorry, but that kind of era, way back before, obviously. I don't think we look into our history. We look into the event of spirituality and gods and everything, you know. I mean, do you look at Stonehenge? I mean, clearly Slane was around about there, wasn't he? If he's real. So it fascinates us all. I was just really rambling then.
Next question. Fine.
I was going, spit it out.
Well, one thing I really want to touch on is the thread that connects all of you is ultimately Pat. Because he's the guy who has co-created and led and directed Slane through all of his journeys, and you've been there at different stages. What has your working relationships been like with Pat? Has it been all smooth sailing? Has it been fractious? Have you ever had a sense? Because a lot of the stories seem to, particularly that Pat tells, seem to be, well, you know, I decided that this was going to be my art. Like, you know, the big hand coming out and plucking somebody out from obscurity. You know, what have your relationships been with, like, Pat?
Well, Pat is absolutely your ally, and he's totally with you all along the whole route. So, what do you want to draw? This, that, the other, la di da. So he's there all the way with you, and I find particularly that it's interesting because every time me and Pat talk about doing a script or anything, we talk about doing Joe Pineapples and Road Jaws. You know, that I'm going to draw it very soon. I lied now. So I said I already started it. There you go.
Court.
Yeah, no. It's like the times. Sometimes when I've told an editor that I've finished the pages, I'll get them in a few days' time, and then I realise I've lost the script, And I think, oh, God, what, yeah, anyway. But no, but Pat's wonderful, and he's always on the phone. But with Pat, I always find we always just end up laughing. We're always laughing on the phone. And we're even talking about something serious. We just see the irony and the craziness and everything we're going to do. So it's just always a delight, you know. You know, he's the boss, man. He's a great guy. Privilege. I mean, of course, he made me what I am, you know.
Simon?
Yeah, no, he's pretty much what Simon just said. He sort of, when we were starting this run, he sort of, it's not so much phone anymore, but emailed me and said, you know, what exactly that? What do you fancy drawing? And, you know, and we'll try and I was sort of quite like, do giants and mermaids and stuff. I said, yeah, sure, we'll do that. And we'll, he can cross over the Giant's Causeway and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, so he's been brilliant. And it's exactly, as you said, he's completely and utterly with you and completely behind you is, you know, what you're doing. And he's so encouraging and you send him the pages over and he says, yeah, it's great. And then I think he tweaks. I haven't sort of come across another writer who does this, but he gets the artwork and then tweaks the dialogue to suit the artwork as well. So that's quite interesting that he's sort of quite collaborative about. But yeah, no, he's been amazing. It's great.
Yeah, I completely agree. Actually, with what Simon was just saying about him tweaking the script, I'm sure he tweaks the script mainly because the storytelling, normally when it comes from me, is so bad. So he has to sort of rewrite the story around my art. But no, absolutely, what everyone said here, you get to chat with him. You know, he wants to hear your ideas. He wants to put stuff in there, you know, which is going to play to your strengths. And I mean, I did with Books of Invasions, I wanted to add sort of extra spreads throughout the story. And, you know, I was expecting him to sort of add new dialogue to some of the stuff. I mean, in one sequence, I actually showed what would happen if Slane was to lose and therefore become the horned god, the old horned god, the Slough McGroff, I suppose. And I did a whole sort of sequence where he becomes all withered and he kills the goddess and, you know, and there's a final scene of him looking like Slough Feg, which is a pretty big step on, you know, stepping on somebody's story, that is. And he was cool with it, you know. So I think, you know, it just shows, you know, sort of what a cool guy he is, really.
What about you, Glenn? What was your relationship like with Pat while you were working on the strip?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, the problem that I had was that I'd never actually done anything like that before. You know, I'd done some very cartoony comic strips and, you know, I wanted to be a bit like Moebius. You know, I wanted to sort of do that kind of thing. I know Pat was very interested in European artists and he saw my stuff, but I'd never actually done anything like that. All of a sudden you're asked to do things like people walking through a river or, you know, some massive thing is on fire. And I didn't know how to draw fire, you know. I had to sort of look at other people, how they drew fire. And, you know, basically I ripped off Brian Bolland for fire. You know? So it's like that. So as I kind of progressed, he sort of seemed to sort of think he saw like sort of particular strengths. And he'd always try and sort of play things to my strengths. So, I mean, I'd say that most of the characters that I draw in comics, I'm trying to tell a story in the way that a black and white movie is told. So it's like they're emoting, you know, they're playing to camera. You know, I mean, they'll be very, very bad actors, but, you know, this kind of, every sort of gesture is about like 10 times as big, so you can tell what they're thinking. So Pat sort of started writing sort of more dialogue scenes and more scenes between characters and sort of slightly less mega violence and, you know, all of that. But as I kind of developed, he sort of played to what he considered to be my strengths, and that helped out very much. Very high voice at the end there, sorry.
One last question I wanted to ask was, what has been your favourite moment of doing Slane? Is there an image you've drawn, whether it's the cover or part of a sequential, that you've gone, actually, I kicked it out of the park with that? Really enjoyed that.
It's like, all right. We're doing this sort of signing up in London, and sort of Simon had just taken over doing Slane for me. And, you know, the very last black and white stuff I did for Slane, I thought, right, I'm going to try and make this so good that whoever takes over is going to look like shit. And then fucking he shows up. And it says, yeah. Oh, my God. You know,
that's all right, because Langley turns up. I got this cleaned up, and he comes along.
Yeah, so anyway, there he is at this kind of desk at the other end, and there's like tons and tons of people queuing up to get his autograph when he was big, good-looking rock, heavy metal god, you know, all of that kind of thing. And some woman had asked me to do a... Yeah. Sorry. Some woman had asked me to draw a painting of Slane, and it's actually in the Book of Scars. It's the one where he's got his arms crossed and he's kind of smiling. So I did that for some woman for £200, and you know she flogged it off, you know, years and years later, and it showed up in the book. And I can remember, you know, she took it over and showed it to Simon. So I was really looking to see what your expression was going to be like when you saw this painting, because I was pleased with it. I thought, right, yeah, all right. Yeah. And he just turned around and went like that, and that was my that's one of my proudest moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. Simon, what about you?
Oh, me? Let me think. I don't know anything in particular, no. Nothing in particular I can think of, really. I think, though, if I was to choose, it would be probably the Seam of Slough-Feg. I need a drink, I'll be fine. A Slough-Feg sequence, when he's in a cave with the woman, the witch, whatever her name was, I forget now. And he's holding the skull, all the skulls that are on the ground, and he's just standing there with his skull in his hand, very theatrically. I think it wasn't a particularly great piece, but I enjoyed that. And Slane warping out was great, great fun. Always good fun. We all agree with that. Because, yeah. Oh, this is going to be crazy. People go nuts. I mean, yeah, but you imagine people we can look at it and go, holy moly, like they said, what the fuck is this? Sorry, I apologize for my language.
I think we're well past the point. Simon, what about you?
I was just really glad not to have to do any more stories that had straight lines in. Me and science fiction just don't, that kind of high science fiction that 2000 is a lot, you know, the dread world and all that, I just absolutely terrible at doing. So Slane was just a relief. And the fact that I think I started doing it sort of roughly about 25 years since I first started working for 2000. So, and to come back onto that, to the character that first got me excited about painting and, you know, being in some way contributing to that character's story, it was just great. And you know, it's nice to sort of follow on from Simon in some way. And, you know, it's quite a nice thing that was.
Clint, what about you? Your favourite moment?
I think there was a scene at the end of, towards the end of Books of Invasions, where the main villain, Odacon, he was originally going to sort of leap off the cliff and swim away for another story. And I was just thinking, no, you know, he's got to die. So I did suggest I suggested the scene where, you know, he falls on the rocks and he's begging for water and Slane urinates on him. And I always thought, yeah, that's the kind of thing Slane would do, you know. So I was quite pleased with that.
Yeah. It's certainly something to put on the CV, isn't it? Yeah. Character urinating. Right, I'm going to open it up for questions. Anyone got a question for the panel? What? Seriously? There's one over there. Quick.
Question for Simon Bisley. There's a frame in Horned God where it's a side profile of Slane, and I don't know if you remember it. It's a side profile, and it's just done in pencil, and it's beautifully done. And I'm just wondering, did you leave it in pencil because of lack of time, or just because it was really good?
That was to do a time factor, for sure. That turns into a style. And so, you know, clearly. But the thing is, I was experimenting through the entire book with different techniques and different mediums, felted pens, colour pencils, paint, everything, anything. So it's experimental time for me. So yeah, but I think it worked. Did it work?
It totally worked. I spent months redrawing that myself.
Just to
improve my artwork. And thank you.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you. Thanks for the question.
It's incredible that you were allowed to experiment because of a change in printing techniques that just meant that all of a sudden comics could be more than just, you know, yeah, four colours.
That's right. I mean, the thing is, we were putting so much into the work. Then it was just printed on like toilet paper almost, you know? It's a shock. Oh my God, you know? It's interesting because some of the pages, it was reprinted. Yeah, you want to cry. What the hell is this? Some of the pages in the reprints, I think they may have lost the scans of one or two pages, and you can see they're rescanned from the original comic book. You can notice that, but I'm not terribly disheartened by it, but yeah, well, there you go. You've got to roll with it, haven't you? The thing is, there's so many great artists put so much great work into this stuff. And I think, you know, you get stuff in galleries and people can proclaim themselves as being great artists and they're fashionable. But the real artists, the true ones, I think a lot of them are in comic books. They're geniuses. Their thought process and everything is just outstanding. To be able to draw the comics like these guys, do, they're thinking on their feet all the time. I mean, it's a process. You imagine when you're doing a comic book, you've got to get all the information, tell the story, plus put emotion and mood and everything else in it. And quickly. Because you don't sit there. It's not a leisure. Leslie thinks so much, you know. You can make some money. You got to think real quick. So it's a matter of like drawing things without having to make too much of an effort. So you got a lot of things in mind, like a gentleman over there about the slain. Just you got to think on your feet. Brilliant. Or sitting down. Not just sitting down.
Any more questions? Oh, yep.
First, I'd like to remember myself to Glenn as one of the first people to gush over you at UKCAC many years ago until you absolutely how wonderful you were. I think you looked very surprised when I sort of dashed up to you on the stairs. If you had the choice, would you have liked to have been able to paint rather than do it in black and white?
Oh, I did end up sort of painting some Slain and Demon Killer. And the only thing I was aware of while I was doing that was like everything had to be as good as I could make it because of bloody Bisley, you know. So I enjoyed doing it. I actually think, you know, it's some of the best sort of work that I did.
We all really hate each other. The thing is, we all want each other to fail.
Yeah.
It's true. But at the same time, we have so much respect for each other because we're all this, brothers
like
in arms.
It's
you know,
like
just
WWE,
a very healthy competitiveness. So me and Glenn be competitive for God knows how many years. We love each other to bits, you know. Except when he's not in the room, I can do that. But no, we're old soldiers. I mean, the thing is, we go way back when.
Oh, God,
You know, we've seen ourselves get older and older, you know, it's funny. Yeah. But the art stays the same. It's time has stopped then. Mm. When we had all our hair and all our teeth.
Yeah. You're not doing too badly.
No. Well, really?
It's just a question for Simon Bisley. There was a South Bank show about the Horn God. Do you remember doing that?
Yeah, it's a disaster, wasn't it? It's interesting because I did the show and they filmed me briefly and I was so worried about speaking. I just didn't want to say anything because I was very nervous about the whole thing. And I remember there's a review in it in the back of the Times. And because of my accent, it said, "Ooh, are slain." It said, "I like painting slain in green." Or something. But when it quoted me, you know, like talking like that, I thought, oh my God.
If you're going to get slagged off by the Times, really.
I know, well, there you go. Jeez, I never forgotten that.
Sorry.
That's okay. Only a pint would be fine.
Another question. There's one right at the back there. I think this is probably the last one we've got time for.
I know we're talking about Slain with you guys right now, but is there anything because of doing Slain or working for 2000 AD that you've all had individually the opportunity to do that you're really proud of? Something outside of that that's come from working on it?
Pretty much everything, I think, came from it.
I'd say my life, my career, paying the rent, you know.
Well, that's true. Everything we've done, everything we are, is from we bloomed from 2000 AD. And we should really appreciate them. I think some people, if they knock it, or previously people who worked for the company knock it, I don't like it particularly, you know, because this is the womb we came from, you know. It made our careers, it made us what we are and everything. So we should be, I feel honoured by it, you know.
Yeah, I'd still be the guy by punt number three, you know.
Yeah, no, I worked for 25 years and nearly half my life on for 2000. And occasionally I do American stuff and I get so irritated just any changes. So, and I just find that as a personal insult. So working on 2000, you just don't get any bother from anybody. And it's great. So I'll always be very fond of 2000.
I think that's probably a very good moment to wrap it up. A massive round of applause for our guests, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that, Earthlitz. Sorry about any sound issues. This was, of course, being recorded in front of a live audience. So not everybody's microphone technique is perfect. But I hope you at least got the gist of this panel. An absolutely fascinating insight into the behind-the-scenes work that goes on in creating the galaxy's greatest comic. Join us next week for a regular episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast, and make sure you tune in 2 weeks' time for another amazing panel from the 40 years of Thrill Power Festival. Splundig Vertrig.
Dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000 AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down!